Yeah, I think it really depends on your lifestyle. And I think lifestyle creep is such an interesting idea that we all run into. And it's just like you started saying earlier, it's like, well, you create a $1 million business and then you want to make a $10 million business or even just a $2 million business. And the reason that that tends to happen is not because you need that money. You don't need the money. It's that you go, oh, well, now I can afford this. And so now I'm going to, you know, I need more money to kind of balance that out.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
Lens and junk bonds.
Jules, it's high yield bonds. Do I tell people you're in junk waitressing?
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Most of the businesses that we sell, Mark, well, maybe not most, but a great deal of them are businesses where someone bootstrapped it, put all their energies into it, got it, up to a certain level, and then looked around and thought, man, this is kind of work now. I'm not loving this day to day anymore. I'm not happy with this challenge and I'm getting burnt out. Happened to me. I had a cushy gig. I was working 20 hours a week, easy business, recurring revenue. And I looked around and said, this isn't fulfilling me. I'm burnt out. I need to move on. A lot of buyers that are from the corporate world don't understand that. Those people that are in the entrepreneurial world know that they need that new challenge, that exciting challenge. And as I understand it, you had Jason Zook on the podcast, husband and wife team, actually, and they talked about working to live, not living to work, and trying to overcome that burnout challenge.
Yeah, Jason got completely burnt out with one of his first businesses. One of his first businesses, a really simple concept, right? He would wear a t-shirt that was a sponsor, would be their company on the t-shirt, and he would wear a t-shirt every single day and put up a YouTube video of that. And the prices increased every single day for that sponsorship. And so as he put it, he said, I was doing daily videos before Casey Neistat made that cool, right? To publish daily videos on YouTube. He said it was great initially, right? I mean, he was making money by just wearing t-shirts and having people follow him around with cameras. But then this organization grew and it grew more and more, and his whole life, every single day, was being documented. And he built this prison. And I think that as entrepreneurs, a lot of us can relate with this idea that you build prisons sometimes for yourselves with the businesses that we build. And so he naturally got completely burned out on that. And now his whole focus in life is entrepreneurship, but with a healthy balance in that life and understanding what are the real goals of your life. What do you really need and why are you doing what you're doing? And I think these are really important lessons for all of us just to keep in mind and have as a focus when we're pushing that entrepreneurialism envelope. Like, why are we pushing growth? Why are we adding this new feature to our business? And really understand, what is our goal as an entrepreneur? Maybe you want to be a billionaire, and if that's your goal, all right, then go for it. But I think most of us get into this entrepreneurship game for the lifestyle. We get into it for the freedom. We get into it to be able to do what we want to do by our own rules. So are we actually doing that? Are you doing that? And is what you're doing fulfilling you today? So this whole podcast, Jason is somebody that I did not know before this podcast. He and I had never talked before, and just a fascinating guy, absolutely magnetic personality. So I'm excited to share this interview with everyone today.
I don't think we can have enough people on the podcast talking about work-life balance. We had Ezra Firestone on. Ezra's got a staff of 25 or 30 VAs working all over the world, and his work-life balance is his primary focus. He and his wife, they've got a certain lifestyle that they want to live. And he's, you know, growing the business, but at the same time, making sure everybody within the business understands that work-life balance. So I'm excited to hear what Jason has to say. It's always interesting to hear somebody's approach and what they do on a day-to-day basis. Let's get right to it.
Jason, I'm super excited to have you on the podcast. Thank you for agreeing to come on here. Based off a completely cold and random email that I sent to you.
It was a good cold and random email. As someone who has sent thousands of cold and random emails in my time as an entrepreneur, it was a good one. You know, it wasn't you didn't just kind of like lay out exactly what you wanted. You were kind, you were nice, you know, you really presented yourself well. And I was like, yeah, I'll say yes to this interview. I have no idea who you are. We're meeting for the first time in this conversation, which I think is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I'll tell you why I wanted to have you on the podcast. I think I said it in that intro email that I sent to you. But on your website, you and your wife have a phrase on there. And it's actually one of the core values that I consider my company to have, Pilot Brokerage, to have. And that is that we work so that we can live. We don't live so that we can work. Right?
Definitely.
This idea that, you know, hey, we're entrepreneurs. We get obsessed. We love the grind. We like that sort of thing. But at a certain point, it's got to have something else beyond just the work itself, right?
Yeah, I think totally.
Your story, I would love to get your story. Have you share your story real quick with the listeners as to how you kind of came about this wandering aimfully and this new mission that you and your wife have?
Yeah, sure. My entrepreneurial journey actually started kind of way late in life, where a lot of people who are entrepreneurs like had lemonade stands and they like went door to door and did all those things and started businesses super early. I didn't. I started my first business when I was 27 on a whim, after leaving a full-time job that I, in all essence, liked. It just was a very boring job and I didn't see a lot of potential for myself there. And I really felt this drive and this pull to do something better and something else. I started my own design company. It was just two people. And from there, I had this kind of crazy idea to get paid to wear t-shirts for a living for no reason whatsoever, other than I just thought social media is kind of growing. This was 2008, 2009. I don't know. There was just something about it that seemed interesting to me. And it struck me one day when I was literally standing in my closet looking at all these clothes that I had paid brands to own and then walk around and kind of schlep and promote. And I was like, wait, why am I doing this? Like, oh, this is so weird. Could someone just pay me to wear their shirt? And so that idea did not take off. I launched a website called iwearyourshirt.com. Five people showed up on the first day. I think three of them were my grandmother, like refreshing the page, no joke. And then I really had to start doing the entrepreneurial kind of hustle and sprint that we all do to get things started. And I was emailing friends and family, and I was getting on Twitter and jumping in conversations back when Twitter wasn't just a barrage of political nightmare that it is now. And that's not to say there's not some still good stuff on Twitter, but this was 2008. So it was very different, very small community. That idea just kind of took off on its own after a lot of hard work, putting in a daily YouTube video. So I recorded 889 videos straight every single day before vlogging was a thing. Before Casey Neistat was, you know, recording videos and we were all watching them and loving them all. I was making really terrible videos every day. But yeah, that led into a couple different ventures along the way. Created a software company to help people build and sell online courses because I wanted to build and sell online courses. And there just wasn't a good one at the time. A couple other little random things. And then, yeah, just a couple of weird different changes and ebbs and flows. My wife actually worked for my I Wear Your Shirt business. And when that had to shut down in 2013, after 5 years, she was kind of left with like, I don't want to go back to the 9-to-5 world. Maybe I'll start my own business as well. And so she started a business. And so we worked like 12 feet from each other, but we always chatted. And then we kind of came back together this past year on this Wandering Aimfully project.
So why did the t-shirt business have to end?
So many factors that we can dive into. I'll lay down on the couch and we can talk about them all. Now, truthfully, it was my first business. And I think so many people can resonate. When you start your first business, you don't know what you don't know. And I didn't know about managing people. I didn't know about managing money. The pricing scheme of I Wear Your Shirt was very poorly designed for paying people a consistent salary. So the first year, it was just myself, and it was $1 on the first day, $2 on the second day, $3 on the third day. And so that pricing scheme is cool because it's so low barrier to entry in the beginning, and towards the end of the year, once you build momentum, it makes sense, and it adds up. It made $66,795 in the first year, which was really cool. But when you have five employees, as I grew the company too, because I thought I had to scale up, I thought I had to grow, you know, I'm reading and watching all the things that we're all reading and watching and thinking that's what I have to do. I ended up having $30,000 in salary in January when my business only made $800. That doesn't work out well. And so it was just a lot of those things where I just was so new to things. You know, we had billables. We were printing all of the t-shirts through an outsourced printing service. I didn't know about, you know, just like paying invoices and all those things. And so I got very back on bills and actually built up $100,000 in debt, not overnight, but in about a year and a half. And it was so crazy to me because, Mark, it went from I was making almost $100,000 with literally no expenses literally getting emails from PayPal like, hey, there's $100,000 in your PayPal account. What's going on? To people emailing me and going, hey, what's going on? You can't pay your bills, or you're 30 days late on your bills. And so eventually I just saw the writing on the wall and was just like, this isn't sustainable. I tried this thing. It kind of grabbed its moment in time in social media and the landscape of it. And I just wanted to move on to other things. Plus, I really overworked myself, every single day running the business, wearing a shirt, managing people, doing all of the marketing and sales and interviews and things. It was just time at the end of 5 years to move on.
5 years is a long time to be wearing other people's shirts.
Yeah, and I'm still wearing other people's shirts, if you think about it. I'm just not talking about them at all. And almost none of them have a brand name on them because I'm just so burnt out from that. But yeah, I actually don't regret any of it. I think I learned so many unbelievably important, valuable lessons that I continue to use to this day in everything that I do. So while it ended not on a wonderful note, and I don't feel like I have like this crazy awesome success story, I also have a really relatable story that so many business owners can kind of stand behind me or stand with me and go, yeah, my first business didn't do well either. Or my second or third or fourth, it fizzled out, or I didn't manage it properly. And you just learn from those experiences and you kind of take those with you and you kind of take your lumps and move forward.
Yeah, I would disagree. I actually think the idea that you were able to take something as simple as wearing a t-shirt and having somebody pay you for that and turning that into something that actually generated revenue is pretty remarkable. Now, obviously, is it sustainable? Eventually, yeah, you're going to run into the problem that you ran into, which is, I don't want to wear your shirt anymore. And I don't want to be on TV, have a video done every day and everything else that you ran into. You said something in there in that story that you were reading and listening to what everybody else was reading and listening to. There's this sort of like momentum that's out there in the business community where there's this almost like a zeitgeist of, here's what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. And it's all towards drive, grind, yeah, grow, expand, and all this sort of stuff. What are some of the things that you've learned over the years with all the different ventures that you've been in about listening to that or not listening to it?
The first one is mo money, mo problems. And as silly and as dumb as that sounds, it's true. I mean, it's just, I don't know any business owners that have taken their business from one level to another level, whatever that means, and not encountered so much more work, so much more stress, so much more all of the things. And I saw that with myself. Like in that first year of I Wear Your Shirt, I was making almost $100,000 because I had some other sponsorship stuff in there. There was literally almost no stress. I mean, the daily creativity and all the things I had to do was a lot of work. But in the third year of I Wear Your Shirt, when I had 5 employees, we had 5 sponsors per day, we made almost $600,000 that year. That was so much stress. It was a nightmare almost. And I'll tell you, I made $30,000 that year. I got paid the least as the person who was doing the most. And I think so many people can relate to that. And so, I saw all of these things that I was latching onto of like, I wanted $1 million business. What does that mean? I wanted, this like big house. Why? I don't need a big house. I actually like having a small place where I know where everything is and I don't have a lot of stuff. And so I really just started to look at a lot of these different values that I was buying into or believing into, especially like the ones that society puts pressure on you. And when you read entrepreneur.com or Business Insider or Forbes, whatever you're reading, we all read these stories of millions and billions and all this stuff. It's like, where are the people who are just making like $100,000 or a couple $100,000 or $50,000 that are super happy? And it's because those stories don't sell, right? Those headlines don't get clicked. And I really just started to reevaluate all these decisions. And it was through a lot of conversations with my wife. And we just kept saying this phrase, what is it all for? Like, what is all of the work for? What is all of the time for? What is all the energy being put into this for? If at the end of a day or the end of a week or a month or a year, you're so tired and you don't enjoy the life you've created, why are we doing that? I should just go get a 9-to-5 job at like Target and like clock in and clock out and leave and that's it. Like, I don't even think about it. And so I do think that there's just a lot of misnomers that go on with this, like buying into the up and to the right mentality, and you should always be growing, and social media landscape can change, so you got to grab all the Facebook advertising stuff you can do. It's like, no, you don't have to do that. You build a business around the life that you want, and you really figure out what that means to you. And I think that's so personal and subjective to everybody that's starting a business.
What moment of your life did you really start to formulate that, where you and your wife, Caroline, were thinking, what are the values that we actually want to have? Because, look, I agree with you 100%. This idea of I want $1 million business, or I want to, and then once you get $1 million business, I want a $10 million business.
Yep.
You know, and I talk to some of our clients, some of the people that are preparing to sell, and I ask them, what are your goals? Why are you thinking about selling? You know, because one of the things that, that I try and impress, especially on sellers, I'll tell you a quick story here, right?
Yeah.
The first client that I worked with, a good friend of mine, he had a company, and he came and he was like, hey, would you help me sell my business? Well, this is how Quiet Light Brokerage started. And I went through the process. We got it sold. I won't say exactly for how much. But you know what? He was in financial trouble just a couple of years later. He gave up a lifestyle business for a big pile of cash today, thinking this is going to set me free, only to find out that he was back in the grind that he was in before. And so I'm curious from your standpoint, what was it where you started to question that up into the right mentality and say, maybe it's not up into the right. Maybe it's whatever is right in front of me today.
Yeah, it's funny. I get chills because I think back to the exact moment. I was in Fargo, North Dakota, speaking at a very small conference called MisfitCon. They don't even do it anymore. And this was like literally 120 people. And I was a speaker. No one knew who the speakers were. So it was just a group of us sitting in this really cool yoga studio, actually kind of converted into this space. And a guy stepped on stage and he had well-coiffed hair and he had skinny jeans and like really nice boots. And I'm like, oh, you know, this guy's going to tell me all the secrets that I need to know to succeed. And he started telling the story and it was eerily similar to mine of trying to grow, being focused on the money, the big house, the things, the stuff. And come to find out that was Joshua Fields Milburn of The Minimalists. And his story was so akin to mine. And when he started talking about these specific values and these specific things and really questioning all of the stuff that we buy into, both societal and personal and these things, it really hit me. Like it hit me hard sitting there. And I remember sitting with my wife at the time, just looking at her going like, uh-oh. We got to rethink everything. And I think I spoke like two or three spaces after him. And I just remember like spilling my guts about how everything wasn't perfect at the time for my Irish shirt business. And yet I was there to talk about this, a business that was supposedly doing so well. And that flight home after that conference, we basically sat down and we're just like, what do we actually need to live? What do we want our lives to look like? And those questions are so big and they're so heady and they're scary because you tend to find yourself thinking, well, if I'm going to make a decision, that's the decision forever. And it's just not true. It can be a decision for the next 3 months, 6 months, year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever it is. And we've changed so much in that time since that conference. I think it was 2012, 2013. And it's just been really big for us to, at every turn, every opportunity where we can do more or when we can sell more or make more, is to ask ourselves, hold on, what is this going to add to our plate? And just like your story with the client that you worked with, I find that question to be so interesting to me. It's like, if I sell a business or anything I'm a part of, like I have a software company, the online course business, like if I sold that business and I made X amount of money from it, what would I do with that time? Like I like working on that business. I actually enjoy it. I want to invest in it. And so if I just sold it for a small chunk of cash, which is a sizable chunk of cash, but in the long term, it's not really that big of a chunk of cash, I'm going to have to start over. And I think we see that with so many people, and you probably see this way more than I do, but so many people sell a business that they actually enjoyed working on only to then find themselves a couple months or years later, bored out of their minds, wishing they had something that fulfilled them to work on every day. And that for me is kind of where this comes from too, of like, I want to make enough money that we don't have to think about money. And truthfully, we're not there yet. Like we don't make enough money every month. We're just like, we don't care about money, but we've set what that mark looks like. And we're working toward that mark. We call that our enough number. And once we hit that number, we're just going to stop trying to make money. And we're going to have to fill in gaps of people because we have a lot of monthly recurring business stuff. And so it's always going to be a game to kind of stay around that enough number. But I love the work that I'm doing, so I'm happy to do that.
How would you balance out the difference between, I think there's two motivations for working hard, right? One is to get ahead. The other one is to not fall behind. Because oftentimes in business, you know, and I've seen it, some of our clients that come to us with distressed businesses where they got to that enough number or probably more than enough. And then they're like, I made it. And they sit there and then they relax. And then a year later, they're thinking, oh my gosh, my business just completely fell apart underneath me. How would you approach that in your own life when you get to that stage of having enough to make sure that you're also not necessarily falling behind?
Yeah, I think it really depends on your lifestyle. And I think lifestyle creep is such an interesting idea that we all run into. And it's just like you started saying earlier, it's like, well, you create a $1 million business and then you want to make a $10 million business or even just a $2 million business. And the reason that that tends to happen is not because you need that money. You don't need the money. It's that you go, oh, well, now I can afford this. And so now I'm going to, you know, I need more money to kind of balance that out. And so I think for Caroline and myself, my wife, we really just started to try and define what are the things that we love and want in life. And if we don't have those now, what does it actually take to get those things? And to really put a price tag on those and then to question those things and to go, you know, for one thing for us has been looking at buying or building a dream home. And for most people, that's in like the millions of dollars. For us, I think we could actually do it for a couple hundred thousand dollars. Like we just want like a 1,200 square foot, like cool, modern kind of prefab place. And we keep going through the effort of that and just going, you know what though, the cash that it would take up front for it, the time and stress to deal with everybody building all the things right now in our lives, it just doesn't fit. And it may be something we do down the road, but it just is not like, I don't want to creep into that and have that completely change our life. So, you know, to answer your question, I really think it's about checking in constantly with the things that matter to you and then really questioning every single one of those things and just going like, do I need more money to do this? Or do I just need to change something in my life or change something in the way that I operate? Because I tend to find for myself, at least, like flexibility and control of my time is the number one thing I want. Of course, I want more money in the bank, but if I can make a little bit less money and have a little bit more times because I'm not working to make more money, I'm happier because I can then choose my schedule every single day of my life. I don't have to give up and sacrifice things, you know, at the whim of making money. And that to me becomes the really important discussion to constantly be having with yourself and thinking about, because it's like you said with that client, you can reach an enough number and then just fall back and go, okay, I'm good. Like I don't have to do anything anymore. And it's like, yeah, but that's not how business works. Like you just don't get to a finish line and then you're done and you won the race. You kind of have to stay in the race at a certain point and you find that pace that you can kind of go at that makes sense for you.
Yeah, I think something that's interesting with business as well, because you talk about lifestyle creep and that's obviously a problem. I think anybody can relate with that, but there's also business lifestyle creep that I've found where, you know, when you start up a new business, a lot of it's bootstrapping, right? You're going out there, you're figuring out how am I going to make this business work with whatever little money I have. Mm-hmm. And then you get that client, they pay you lots of money. You're like, awesome, I can now pay for ads. And so now you start paying for ads and you have an ad budget. And then you mm-hmm. hire a few employees. Now we have those employees. Next thing you know, your monthly budget is ramping up. And you have the added stress of, I got to keep layering on more and more revenue to be able to cover this monthly budget as well. I think it's an interesting concept to say core values, both for the business, core values also for yourself, and keep reminding yourself of those core values in order to stay true to that and have a balanced life. Not so much a question, just kind of riffing on what you're saying there.
No, and I do think it's a really valid one because we've thought about that. Like my wife and I, we live and work at home. So like where we would have a dining room table, we have our desks. And it's been that way for the past 6 years, 5 years, something like that. And for a lot of people, that would probably be the worst thing ever. Like they'd be like, oh, I don't want to look at my work. I want to be completely separate. So I need an office or I need a studio or whatever. And so I do think there are just some decisions you can make for your business being separate from your life, if that really matters to you. For us, we run very creative businesses. We love the community that we built. So like, I don't hate my email inbox. I don't loathe looking at these things. So it's for us, it is such a blend. And lifestyle creep, business creep for us would potentially be like, oh, we want like a really cool office space. Like we've talked about this before. And it's like, yeah, but we have that in our home. It's just, it's not a full dedicated space and we don't actually need that. So it's continuing to come back to that. And then honestly, I think a big part of it too is not watching all of like the videos and reading all the stories of like the cool office spaces. Cause then you just get stuck in that mode of like, oh yeah, but I really want like the ping pong table and, you know, like the full living wall. And it's like, I don't need that. Like, that's just a cool thing. And I can appreciate someone else having that.
I do want a nap pod. I'm just going to say it. Like, I would love to have a nap pod in my office because that would be awesome. I've got a glass door. You can actually see it. If you're listening in your car, you can't see it, of course. But I have a glass door behind me, so I can't really take naps in my office. Let's talk a little bit about your community. I love what you guys are doing with the community over at wanderingaimfully.com. Tell me a little bit about it and who it's targeted towards and what the whole purpose of this is.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question of who it's targeted towards, because when we started to blend Caroline and my two businesses together in March of 2018, and actually the conversation started many months before that, we weren't sure who to target because, you know, her business was targeted to soulful creatives, which is kind of general in a way. And my business was targeted to business owners who just want to get better at taking action. Again, very general audience. Like, it's not like stay-at-home moms who love to cook vegan meals. You know, it's like, it's not as focused as it could be. And so when we started Wandering Aimfully, it was very generic of like independent creative business owners. And that's designers, musicians, artists, blah, blah, blah. And we really found that it was tough to get people to identify of like, hey, I'm raising my hand. I fit within Wandering Aimfully. Like, they kind of felt like they did, but it just wasn't kind of niche enough, if you will. And so in the past couple months, we really decided to hone in further on, okay, who have we attracted over the years that we've made the most impact for? And what we found is that that's service-based business owners or like client-based business owners. So that is your designers, that's your developers, that's your coaches, that's people who have clients and that they want to move away from selling their time one-on-one to building digital product businesses. So that's having online courses, books, workshops, membership communities of their own, whatever that is. And we kind of went back to the root of what did we do when we were getting started? And that's exactly what we did. We were service-based business owners and we wanted to stop trading our time for money and we wanted to try and reach more people and make more of an impact based on what we had learned and experienced. And so now that's essentially who Wandering Aimfully is for. And there are some fringe benefits to people who are not those people, but if you run a service-based business and you want to transition into selling digital products, we're the perfect community for you because we ourselves have had that exact experience. We know exactly how to help you. We built now a 6-month program that helps people really do that without burning out because we've just decided that people need to slow the hell down and not try and transition their entire business in 24 to 48 hours or a couple of weeks. And it's been really interesting to shift the focus on this is exactly who we're for and it's a smaller audience. And you have people who self-identify much faster than we did before where people are like, I don't know if it's right for me. It's like, no, they know that it's right for them. And then for everybody else, they can still kind of try and figure out if it's right for them, but we can now more clearly identify.
That's pretty cool. And I'll kind of poke around through your website and you guys have all sorts of prepackaged courses and checklists and everything else. One thing I love about this, right, and I can relate with buyers who are acquiring a new business or anyone growing their business as well, you get into something and there's a sense of I've got to be doing all the things all right now. Right. Mm-hmm. I've got to have my Facebook marketing strategy, do some CRO and get an Instagram account going because it doesn't have that. And there's this long list of things and you're going to just kill yourself if you try and do that. What you guys have through this community, I saw you have a bunch of checklists and action plans for some pretty normal things that a lot of different companies are going to have to deal with as well. And it seems like the entire goal, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the entire goal is just that, you know, breaking up these large projects into bite-sized pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just want to help people navigate, like you said, when someone is running a business or starting a business or making that transition from clients to products, there's a lot that can be done. And really what we try and do, because it's what we've done for ourselves, is to identify, but what do you need to do? Like, what is actually going to make an impact? Because for so many people, a Facebook ad campaign or an Instagram account, it's not at all what they should be focusing on. What they should be focusing on is creating some type of really valuable content that can be searched for on the internet because Google is still the number one place that people go on the internet and that is not going to change for quite a while. And so, you know, we've just seen through a lot of experience that people want the shiny, new and fancy and we've been there as well. We've wanted those things too. But you find that they actually don't make that big of an impact on your business and it's a lot of time spent without a lot of return. And listen, I'm all for branding. I'm all for getting the word out about your business and going where people's attention is. But I think that there's a lot to be said for having a good foundation for your business, making sure that your ducks are in a row. And so much, and you probably see this so often, is as business owners, a lot of times we don't even know the basics of expenses and cash flow. And I know that stuff can sound really silly to people, like, oh, how do you not know that? It's because it's different for every business. So what we're taught about how to run a business may not be applicable to the business we actually create and start. And so I think that so much of that we've seen is just trying to help people navigate their own journey based on our experiences of community members, identifying bigger tasks, like you said, that people want to do. Like if people want to start a podcast, that's a pretty big task. Like there's a lot of things that go into that that you don't see. And so we've broken it down. I think it's in like, I don't know, I want to say less than 100 steps. And that sounds like a ton, but some of the steps are like, name your podcast. The step, cool, check it off the list. But it gives you this like incredible bite-sized thing. And people find that it's so helpful to just have this list to be able to like, yes, I did that. Yes, I did that. And go through and knock it all out, as opposed to having to think of everything themselves.
Yeah, it reminds me of a couple other episodes that we did here at the Quiet Light Podcast. One was with Bjork Ostrom, who owns Food Blogger Pro and a few other pretty big food blogs. He talked a lot about, he's grown that company from nothing into a significant enterprise. And he talked a lot about this idea of, I'm not going to try and double my business tomorrow. I'm going to try and have this single daily marginal improvement. Mm-hmm. And the compounding effect of this on a day-to-day basis. The other person, you talked about going back to the basics and focusing on those things that really work. Well, the person you're agreeing with right now, Babak Azad, who grew Beachbody into a $1 billion business, was on the podcast. And he told me, he said, people are focusing on way too many advertising channels. He said that you should really be focusing on just a few, probably one, maybe two, because if you're focusing on six, that means you're not doing any of them well, right? You got to focus on those basics. So I think that's fantastic advice. Okay, I'm going to round this out with a final question here for you. And this is really the content on your site. I absolutely love. I've always liked these I'm doing this productivity experiment or just whatever sort of experiment.
Yeah.
You recently rode a bike, a stationary bike at your standing desk for 30 days. And I haven't read how it finishes out, but how did that go? How'd it go?
Cliffhanger. Okay. So the reason why I did this experiment, why I love doing 30-day challenges specifically, is because it's just like you said, with like you do these the little daily things that can add up and incrementally make a big change or make a big impact. And it's hard to change. It's hard to build habits. It's hard to do those things. And I highly recommend a book, Atomic Habits by James Clear, a friend of mine and just a super smart guy when it comes out. So if anybody's like, I'm bad at habits, James will help you. That book is really great. But for me, I just always like breaking these things down into 30-day challenges. So to round this out, so I rode a stationary bike at my standing desk every single day for 30 days. I just wanted to know, could I get a little bit of exercise every day? Because I'm just at my desk. I didn't want to sit, at my desk and do those things. And I ended up burning 18,339 calories in 30 days. It's insane. And I wrote this at the end of the thing, and I talked about this in the video that I kind of recapped and put it all together. It did not feel like I was working out. It felt like I was sitting at my desk, very slowly, methodically riding this bike while doing emails and a bunch of other admin tasks. And the average amount of time that I rode the bike a day was 1 hour. It didn't feel like I was riding an hour because I would break it up into different chunks throughout the day. I rode an average of 25 miles a day. And at the end of it, my pants fit better. I had more energy every day. And it really became a good solid habit for me. So it was super just a weird random thing I wanted to do. But now, like, I still have the bike. We're now a couple of weeks after that it finished up. I'm still riding it. It's great. My wife's starting to ride it. And it's just one of those things that's like, challenge yourself to do something for 30 days that you might think is weird or out there or different and see what kind of tangible result you get cumulatively over the time. And you might realize like, wow, yeah, in a couple of days, of course, I didn't get like six pack abs from riding this bike. But I think if I do this for 6 months, I'm probably going to be in better shape than I would have been in just if I'd continued going to the gym and eating better and all those things.
That's fantastic. So I absolutely love everything that you guys stand for. I think it's so easy for all of us entrepreneurs to build businesses, but at the same time, build little prisons for ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. Because we get so driven by productivity. We worship at that altar. And then also by just having more and more and more, instead of thinking about, like you said at the beginning, that focus on the goals and ask yourself the question. I would encourage everyone listening, that's thinking about buying a business or maybe you want to sell the business and you're building something right now, to ask those questions. Why? For what? What are your goals? What are your values? What do you value in life? Really good advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Great chatting with you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, I should say. There we go. Yeah, way to end it professionally. All right, thanks for coming on, Jason.
Yeah, no problem.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.